Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 9, The Ascent. Teleplay by Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Hewitt Wolf, and directed by Alan Croker. The Ascent aired on November 25th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, trapped on an inhospitable world, Quark and Odo must survive together. Meanwhile, Nog returns to the station from Starfleet Academy. Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
I will always remember the Pine Barrens episode of Deep Space Nine. I just want to give some insight to that because, like, obviously the plot of this episode is not the same as the Pine Barrens. But in the episode of The Sopranos, The Pine Barrens, Christopher and Polly go to, like, collect money from one of Silvio's guys and end up shooting him. And then they have to go bury him in the woods. And the guy is alive when they get there. And they're chasing him through, like, the snowy woods. And they're freezing. And Polly's hair looks very similar to Odo's hair. And Christopher is wearing, like, a carpet from inside of a truck, similarly to Quark having, like, a blanket wrapped around him. So it's just, like, a visual similarity, not a plot similarity.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah.
Yes, I remembered it because of that. And I did remember the B plot with Jake and Nog. I just didn't remember that they were, like, in the same episode. Yeah.
I also had forgotten and then remembered really quickly about the Jake and Nog stuff.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting, the idea of doing this as, like, the A plots and the B plots, because it's very much, like, men need these dramatic interventions, either, like, externally from the universe or, like, people around them to actually, like, communicate and, like,
yeah,
have a conversation about their feelings.
Yeah, Sisko does a lot of, like, orchestrating in the B-plot, I would say, to get, like, Jake and Nog to make up or figure it out. But I do think it is funny. Like, Sisko is so daddy that I don't think he would need outside influence to, like, help him get his shit together. But, like, Odo and Quark and Jake and Nog are not at the same level as Sisko. So, yeah.
Yeah. At times for me, too, like, on talking out of the other side of my mouth, which is my favorite thing to do, a lot of the, like, comedy aspect of the, like, the Odd Couple Quark and Odo stuff at times, like, very much had, like, an enemies to lovers feel to it. Like, it's,
oh,
like, 100%. there's a romance version of this where they fuck on the mountain.
Oh my god, it's really funny you say that, because when I was watching this with AJ yesterday, at the last scene where they're in the sick bay, AJ goes, oh no, there's two beds. Because they're, like, next to each other and not in one bed. Like, the romance version of this that Odo would totally read about, by the way, has one bed. Like, they would get, like, they'd find, like, a cabin to spend the night in, and there would be one bed. Apparently this episode is partially inspired by the Samuel Beckett play Waiting for Godot, which I've never seen. But apparently is about two people that, like, are just waiting for something to happen, and they just are insulting each other the whole time. So I think that that is very appropriate.
Yeah, I'm, like, somewhat, like, I'm familiar with the concept of the play, but I've never, like, seen it or read it.
Yeah.
It's got some pretty crazy, not crazy, but just a very diverse type of, like, interpretations of the play.
Yeah, for sure.
When I first kind of encountered Waiting for Godot, Godot? I don't know how you say it.
Godot. It's not pronounced Godot. like what's her face's last name?
Last name.
Gal.
Yeah. was it right when I first like became culturally aware of the play? It was when the two leads were played by Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Oh, that's so funny.
It's probably like 20 plus years ago or something like that now. Definitely post first X-Men movie, like, but somewhere around there.
So. I feel like I probably read about that in, because I read Patrick Stewart's memoir recently. And I'm sure he talked about that, but that was the best memoir I've ever read, by far. And it was, he talks about Ian a lot in it.
Nice. So, Jake and Nog. Nog is, I think he's only, said he's like sophomore, right? Like Cisco's saying something about sophomore year, and it's basically he's doing like a practicum on the station or something like that. Was that your right. interpretation of why he's back as well?
I didn't care enough to like remember to like try to figure out why. I was like, they just put these babies together and that was enough for me.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's pretty, like, not twee, but, like, it's not this, like, the B-plot doesn't have, like, a whole lot of, like, depth to it, really, but...
Yeah, it's basically two people having different interpretations of, like, what, how to live.
Yeah.
Nog I mean, has been in Starfleet, and so he has been living by these, like, rules, and Jake has been living under his dad, who seems very lovely, but probably expects a lot of him. And mm-hmm. so he's like, I'm just going to be doing my own thing instead of what I'm... Like, he just doesn't want someone to tell him what to do, which is very understandable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... And, like, it reads... When I should, like, imply that it's not interesting. It's not that it's not interesting. It reads very... true, right? That idea of like, oh, we're best friends, we're gonna move out, we're gonna be roommates at college, or like, you know, roommates like, you know, at home post college, and like, it's gonna be great. And it's how folks respond to their newfound air quotes like freedom, or air quotes like adulting for the first time, and like how they respond to that, and the idea of sometimes the worst roommates are your best friends.
Yeah.
You know, because it just changes the dynamic, but...
For sure. I am very lucky to say that's not my current experience, because I'm living with two of my best friends, and it's going great, but we're also, like, not, you know, 19 years old or whatever they are.
Totally. Like...
I do think that Nog is, like, really oblivious to how he's behaving. I did laugh at... We're going to clean every day? No, just the odd and even ones.
Yeah, it's like, come on, like, Jake, weren't you listening?
But I do think Nog really crosses a line when he copy edits Jake's story without permission. That was really fucked up, and I can't imagine anyone thinking that that is okay. But then I just remember that Nog is Nog and thinks that... I don't think Nog believes in privacy.
It's just, like, it... And I mean, when we've seen them together before, like, obviously, you know, they were like teenagers or preteens or whatever, just like getting into trouble, you know?
Yep.
Bored kids being kids. Just basically living that like Gen X life, right? Latchkey kids. I just wonder what like it would have been. Well, I guess we saw like what Nog was like when they did that double date and he was not very
culturally aware. Yeah, I was thinking of the exact same scene, so that's really funny that you called that out.
But yeah, it's like Nog has, like, swung, like, completely, like, the other way, and it's like, yeah. But also is still Nog, when it's like, oh, this is how you do things? Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I just like, wondered... he's Nog, and if it was someone else, I'd be like, okay, they're a little fashy now, but it's Nog, so, like, he's not.
Yeah, I just wondered if he would have, like, done the story thing, like, before. But I guess he probably wouldn't necessarily have had the opportunity to in the same way, because they weren't roommates.
Did you catch that they name-checked past prologue as the story?
Yeah.
That made me laugh.
I did.
I did think that it was really funny how Sisko chimes in and, like, fixes the situation, basically. Like, he shows up to tell Jake, well, you have to move back home because if you can't find a roommate, because the regulations are, like, this kind of quarters needs two occupants. I couldn't tell if I really thought that that was true, but it didn't matter. Like, I think it's funny. Like, that seems like something a parent would make up to, like, get you to be make up with your friend.
Right. It also made me wonder, like, how does the allotment of quarters work on the station? Like, obviously, if you're there, like, as part of the Bajoran militia or Starfleet, you would get them kind of, like, assigned, like, barracks. But it's, like, how does it work for civilians that just choose to live and work
right
there?
Especially since Jake, like, could have a home with his dad. Like, so if they didn't have an extra apartment, he could be fine staying with his dad. So it is interesting, like, if you become a certain age, you do just get an apartment.
Or is he able to do that because Nog would get quarter, like, an apartment or quarters or whatever, like, assigned?
Right, like, he would get assigned.
Like, and he got bigger ones because he found his own roommate? Like, again, I'm thinking about this way too much, but...
No, I'm very interested in it. I want, like, a rules and regs of, like, Deep Space Nine. I would
like,
read that
is there
book.
A waiting list? Like,
oh, so this actually reminds me. I have a book about when I went to see the Downton Abbey exhibit, and mm-hmm. it was a book of like the rules for the staff, like how things should be done. And I feel like I want that, but like for Deep Space Nine.
This is such like a nitpicky like Star Trekky fandom like question to want to know more about the logistics of housing
but of course we would want to know that yeah. That is the kind of shit that we like. I mean, listen, we all know that I like logistics. It's just right? It's just how I am. If I was living with Jake though, I'd be like, please. I have always been someone who's been cluttered, but not cluttered, like, in a shared space.
Yeah.
Or I try not to be. So, like, Jake's clutteredness would drive me up a wall. Well, and I would be, so frustrated that I would just clean up after him, which is also not how that should be handled.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can see, like, the idea of, like, trying to contain it to, like, your bedroom or whatever, and, like, some of it could spill over. But, like, yeah. Like, it's...
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Maybe Jake just has really bad ADHD.
That's true. And that is a problem. I don't mean a problem. I mean, like, keeping up your house is a problem faced by people with ADHD. Understandably. Now that we've diagnosed Jake.
I mean, that's... Yeah, okay. Good. Let's... it's like that meme where it's like you're on the highway and all of a sudden you like turn off on the exit ramp because the sign says something different.
Oh my God. That happened to me yesterday at the airport. Someone was like... I was getting into the arrivals lane to pick up my roommates. And this guy, like, at the last minute realized he needed to be in the arrivals lane and, like, almost cut me off. And I was like, what the fuck, dude?
Speaking of self-diagnosing, the best part of this episode was during, or my favorite part anyway, not always the best part. My favorite part is Quark and Odo when they're having a disagreement and Quark shows himself to be... a true, true ally and calls Odo a fascist like two or three times.
Oh my God, I loved that part too. So I will agree that it is the best part of the episode.
Because it's like, that's what we've been talking about for like flirting with for like five seasons. And the idea that with the, I mean, I know Odo's a solid now, but the idea that like the way they've, you know, Odo liking order and everything else being like genetic and part of the
family. I mean, especially
Dominion.
After
like
last week.
They made fascism a genetic trait. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know. Like, especially following up last week's episode. Yeah, that was really amazing. I absolutely loved that. I kind of feel like besides the visuals of the planet and like them in their outfits trying to not freeze to death with regard to looking like the Sopranos episode I mentioned earlier, that this episode and this A plot, it doesn't have a ton there besides, like, two people who get on each other's nerves interacting with each other, which is something I do find enjoyment about, but enjoyment from, but, like, I don't feel, like, not a lot is happening in this plot.
I mean, it's very simple at its core.
Yeah, like Odo is, like, arresting Quark, but won't tell him the details, but we also find out later that, like, he's not arrested. He just, like, is a witness in a case. He's not even the defendant. Yeah. So, like, Odo doesn't even know, like, what he's hauling him in for, which is very silly. So they do a lot of jokes about Quark's ears and how, because they're not having a conversation on the runabout, like, he hears all these, like, noises, and then eventually they find a bomb on the runabout, which do we ever find? Oh, was that like the Orion Syndicate trying to take him out or whatever?
Yeah.
Because he was a witness?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's very Sopranos as well.
Well, and like, even just the idea of Quark's so good in this episode, where Odo like realizes and is like, trying to burn Quark, where it's like, oh, you're such, you know, small timer, you can't even get in the Orion Syndicate because you want to, that's why you know they wanted to kill, blah blah blah, that whole realization. And then Quark's like, yeah, you're right, I am a failure, you're the one who spent 10 years trying to catch a failure.
Yeah, I really liked that too. I thought that was really funny, like him being like, yeah, your life's been useless, which is horrible, but like also really funny.
Yeah.
The couple of things I do want to talk about besides like the actual, like not related to the actual plot, is there's a couple of conversations that Odo and Quark have. One with regard to the romance novels that Odo is reading. When they're on the runabout and he's like not talking with him, and Quark's like, you know, I'm bored, like chat with me. And then Odo gets really defensive about it and tries to say like, yeah, I'm reading this because I'm interested in like the crime element, the human of like condition humanity or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, like Mr. Jesus over here, or it felt very much like some like religious fundamentalist being like, all sex is bad or whatever. And then later in the episode, Quark basically says to Odo, like, you must be really happy you're a solid no. You got what you wanted. Which is interesting because I think about how Data always was trying to, like, be more human and, like, stuff like that in TNG. And Odo is similar in some ways, but also critiquing humanity in a lot of ways as well. Like, there's been many episodes where he's like, I don't understand, like, people falling in love and romance and dating and this whole bit. And it is interesting because he's always chosen humans over the changelings, which the changelings in the show are often evil. I'm not going to put that on a whole species, but, like, you know, the ones we've met are bad. So I get that, but it is interesting that it's perceived that Odo wanted to be a human, because I don't think I've ever thought that.
Yeah, I don't think I've, like, ever really thought that either. And yeah, it's completely right on that, like, you bring up, like, Data and stuff, because, like, part of the TOS, like, formula or archetypes or whatever that they're repeating, like, with Deep Space Nine and then, you know, Voyager as well, as the idea that, like, the crew needs, like, that outsider, right? The, like, the lineage kind of going back to Spock, right? Being able to, like, comment on humanity from a somewhat outside-ish perspective. I know Data's whole arc is, like, arguably, or this is what the intent was, like, I think I have a little different read of Spock than this, but, like, he was the inverse of Spock, right? Like, wanting to become more human, whereas, you know, at least pre the motion picture, Spock's always kind of at war with his two natures and wanting to prove himself as being Vulcan and everything else.
Yes.
Odo is the outsider, but I totally agree with you that, like, it's he's wanting to understand who he is, which I think in a lot of ways is very human.
But I think it's not about reconciling
natures in the same
way. Yeah. And I do think he often studies and wants to understand humanity, but I don't think he, I don't think it's from a place of wanting to be that. I think it's a, from a place of, these are the people that are around me. I'd like to understand them because I find it interesting. Yeah. And also I'm interacting with humans and humanoids. I don't think it's from like a place of like jealousy or like wanting to be a different species or anything like that.
No, I think a lot of ways is trying to like understand himself and his place in the world by understanding the world around him. Right.
Yeah. Fair.
And the people around him.
So throughout the episode, Odo and Cork are obviously doing a lot of bickering. There's the point where they get into an actual physical fight. And as you mentioned earlier, Cork is calling Odo a fascist, which I thought was hysterical and accurate. But eventually, like, Odo's leg breaks due to this fight. And it looks really bad. I think AJ was like, I don't think legs are supposed to go in that direction. It just looked very, like, really funny and ridiculous. Like, the leg was like, there's no way that that happened. But Cork makes a splint for him after they've been fighting and calling each other names. He sits there and is like, I'm still gonna, you know, do some medical stuff for you.
First aid king.
Odo passes out, obviously, because, like, he's in pain. There's a lot of stuff happening. And when he wakes up, like, he assumes Cork must have died because he's not there. And I guess we didn't say this, but we kind of, like, skipped over the plot because I don't think there's much to it. But basically, after the bomb happened, they, like, crash land on this planet that's not really habitable. And their comms are fucked up, so they have to like go, we need to go get the higher ground so we can like, you know, beat Anakin or whatever. No, so we can, send our comms. And then the longer that they're like walking towards this mountain, they realize it's like really far away. Like they thought it was a few hours away, but it's like, it looks like it's days away. So Cork just like must have gone on his own, which is amazing. And Odo just thinks he's dead and like is doing his final security log. And I thought that Odo's death instructions were very accurate to what Odo would want. And he says, cremate me, put my ashes in my bucket and shoot me through the wormhole. And I just felt that that was very on point. But Cork saved both of their lives. Because he's a good boy after all.
Mm-hmm. Armin's so good in this episode. Like, even, like, some of the physical comedy, like, when he has hearing loss and the one ear, when Cork has hearing loss.
Oh, yeah, that was so funny. It's
just like, yeah.
Armin is the best.
King shit. Was there anything else in the Quoto plot you wanted to cover?
I don't think so. But I just want everyone to know that I made the Pine Barrens reference the first time I watched this episode back when I watched the show the first time. So it stuck with me.
And like, even if you haven't seen The Sopranos, if you've been online at all, you've seen a still from the Pine Barrens.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do like a mashup of the two photos when I post this on socials eventually. I think that'll be fun.
All right. Now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned by Dr. McCoy in Star Trek III. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 in the film Forbidden Planet. Forbidden Planet. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
Quoto.
Yeah. Yeah. I kept thinking watching this episode what our friend Anya said in a Quoto episode a while back, how Odo's smooth and Quark's bumpy and they just, you know.
Yeah.
Balance each other out.
I love that. My most Star Trek thing is actually very similar. I wouldn't say it's like their ship name, but just having two frenemies like paired up for the episode to see how they react with each other feels very Star Trek.
Yeah, and like I think it's a good like way within the like Roddenberry box to try and like get character moments and drama, right? With like people who aren't supposed to like disagree with each other and like all these other weird rules that make it impossible to write. Good compelling characters and stories, in my opinion, sometimes, but I'd agree there. Well, Elise, I think we've reached the summit of our mountain for today. Until next time, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z. As well as anywhere you listen to podcasts. We just finished season 3 of True Blood, and by the time this drops, we might have started season 4 already, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, and you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together at Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
Until next time, computer and program.
Bye.